Our United Healthcare Community and State Newsletter is your go-to source for the latest Medicaid news and United Healthcare programs serving Medicaid beneficiaries. Subscribe now by visiting our website at uhccs.com/newsletter. Stay in the know by gaining access to our latest blogs, educational videos, and upcoming events. At United Healthcare, our mission is to help people live healthier lives and make the health system work better for everyone in local communities across the U.S.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Health Affairs This Week, the podcast where editors at Health Affairs talk about the health policy news and stories that we've been following throughout the week. I'm Rob Lott.
And I'm Kathleen Haddad.
So Kathleen, let's get right to the topic today, and that is the April issue of Health Affairs, which is a special theme issue on perinatal mental health. We'll talk about how the issue came to be and what's in it. But first, let's acknowledge our funders for the issue. They are the Perigee Fund, the California Healthcare Foundation, the W.K. Kellogg Foundation, the Conrad N. Hilton Foundation, the Cambia Health Foundation, and Con Alma Health Foundation. Now, this month's issue is our second theme issue on perinatal mental health. We published an issue on the topic about 3 years ago. So Kathleen, I guess my first question is, what's new?
Well, Rob, the earlier issue covered the need for improvement in screening, access to care, and diagnosis, which are all required to identify people with perinatal mental illness and get them into treatment. This issue goes further by focusing on some important societal requirements needed to improve the mental health of the perinatal population. This issue also explores the impact of perinatal mental health on partners and children. And of course, it updates us on the burden of perinatal mental health and some promising solutions.
Okay, so Kathleen, producing an issue dedicated to a single theme is a major endeavor, as I know, almost a year in the making. I'm wondering if maybe you can tell us a little more about what getting an issue like this onto the newsstands, so to speak. What does that involve?
Well, we start with the help of some experts in the field. We have advisors, and the advisors for this issue were Karen Tabb, a professor of social work at the University of Illinois, and Emily Dossett, a clinical professor of psychiatry and obstetrics and gynecology at the University of Southern California School of Medicine. We gather through the team, our group of about 20 to 30 people in a planning meeting who are also experts in the field. And that helps us determine what are the important themes and issues that are current in perinatal mental illness. We then issue a call for abstracts, and we received 101 of them. We have a voting system that's pretty detailed among the editors, and we then determine which papers we'll invite. We did invite 27 papers and a narrative matters essay for this issue, and we ended up accepting 16 papers, the narrative matters essay, and we have some forefront articles as well.
So, Kathleen, we certainly know that perinatal mental health is a major challenge in the U.S. 1/5 of pregnant people experience a mental health condition pre or postpartum. In addition to the personal costs, the cost to society is staggering, estimated $14 billion. And, of course, mental health conditions account for nearly a quarter of pregnancy-related deaths. So Kathleen, let's talk about how this issue approaches the topic and those challenges. What does it cover?
Well, first, the issue focuses on four conditions. Anxiety and depression is the most common disorder in perinatal mental health, affecting about 20% of people. Postpartum depression affects about 15%, and the difference there is that postpartum depression is depression that occurs after the birth of a child. Post-traumatic stress disorder affects about 3-4% of the population. And then we also focus on women with serious mental illness, and that condition affects a little under 1%. That condition includes more serious mental illnesses such as bipolar depression and schizophrenia.
Okay, so are there some overarching themes or common threads that you see running through the papers in this issue?
Well, that's a good question, Rob, because with disparate set of topics under a main issue, it might be hard to set a direction. And somehow that seems to work automatically almost. We have several overarching themes as if we started out asking for them. But the issue tackles the immense burden of poor perinatal mental health on birthing people, on their families, and on society. And then we have papers that look at overall solutions to the problem and solutions targeted to specific populations. We also have two overview papers that do a wonderful job of setting up the other papers.
Yeah, those are so important, those sort of table setting papers. I know in this case, they both look at social requisites for the well-being of birthing people and their families. The first one by issue advisors Karen Dabb and Emily Dossett focuses on the need for public policies to uphold reproductive justice, a set of human rights for birthing people. These rights include, of course, the right to have or not have a child and the rights to resources needed to raise a healthy child. The second overview paper by Allison Stube and colleagues reviews the full landscape of social policies needed, what the authors call, quote, vital conditions to build and sustain perinatal well-being and fulfill the tenets of reproductive justice.
Right, Rob. I encourage our readers to dive into those overview papers because they really provide insight into how it takes a village to birth and raise a healthy child. In many developed countries, a village is provided, more or less. In the U.S., it's more of an independent undertaking, and these papers look at that and try to show us how we could improve and how we'd all be better off if that changed. So I want to also relate an interesting anecdote in the reviewing that paper. One reviewer of the Stube paper commented on how the paper was such a thorough overview, a review of the literature on social needs in the reproductive space, that he said he was making it a must read in his classes from now on. I'll say that paper had so many endnotes, we had to move some of them into an appendix. We really don't like that many endnotes, but in this case, it was totally justified because the paper covered every aspect of social needs to cultivate perinatal well-being.
Wow, it sounds like a really tremendous resource. So, Kathleen, among the papers illustrating the burden of perinatal mental illness, what stands out?
Well, Rob, two of the papers used national data on the commercially insured to look at trends in rates of diagnosis of perinatal anxiety and depression and perinatal PTSD. Both of those showed rising rates of the disorder from 2008 to 2020. And in both, the rate of increase steepened after ACA implementation in 2014. So the ACA, it's important to note, had extended parity in mental health treatment and also had other provisions expanding access to care. So the authors interpreted these findings as picking up more cases due to the ACA, or in addition to more cases appearing in the community. So the depression paper also studied trends in treatment and suicidality over that study period and found that the treatment increased after the ACA and suicidality declined. So the authors say that the combined results suggest that expanded access to treatment after the ACA identified more cases and that more people got treatment. So there was some public policy success there.
Okay, so it sounds like some glimmers of hope. And I'm wondering, Kathleen, if you could say a little more about how the ACA and other policies fit into the sort of bigger picture of solutions. What is there out there that we know works to address some of these challenges?
We looked a little at specific solutions. There's an interesting theme within a theme in the solutions category, and that is what experts thought might work to increase access to mental health care might not be the best approach without some changes. And this was co-locating mental health services with OB practice. So a qualitative study by Jessica Harrison and colleagues showed that integrating mental health into the regular OB practice had some problems in that mental health staff felt marginalized and overworked because OB clinicians over-relied on them. Two other papers in the issue found that other methods of screening, diagnosis, and treatment, or increasing that process, were very promising. One of those showed that screening and referral carried out by phone and text from a care coordinator got more people into treatment than the usual method of having OB providers screen and refer. The authors attributed the result to less stigma and more specialized focus on the patient. Another paper took a look at how the nation's 30 perinatal psychiatry access programs provide specialized telehealth consultation to OB providers to get patients diagnosed and referred to care. So, Rob, I know you took an interest in some of the papers that discuss solutions among specific populations. Which of those papers caught your eye?
Yeah, Kathleen, these papers looked at solutions tailored to, among others, tribal communities, mothers of Mexican descent, and women with serious mental illness, such as bipolar depression and schizophrenia. And as a father, I was particularly interested in a paper on paternal perinatal mental health by Tova Walsh. This paper said that half of men whose partners experienced postpartum depression will also experience it themselves. And it showed that screening and treating fathers helps them support their partners and children. Good news.
We also published a moving Narrative Matters piece, Rob. Tell us what the story was.
Yeah, Kathleen, it's a very powerful story from author Angelica Al-Janabi, who wrote about how she experienced her pregnancy as someone who suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, anxiety, and a condition known as tachyphobia, which is a profound pathological fear of pregnancy and childbirth, often associated with early trauma. Now, despite being a public health professional herself and what we might describe as an engaged and informed patient, the author nevertheless encountered roadblock after roadblock to getting the care she needed, and along the way found clinicians and caregivers who really were not trained or experienced in providing trauma-informed care. After giving birth, it took her more than 2 years before she was diagnosed with postpartum depression. There's a lot more in the article itself, really eye-opening stuff as well. And the author does make some recommendations for how to make that trauma-informed care more accessible to the people who would benefit from it most. I really encourage our listeners to check it out and read the whole piece.
Thanks for sharing that story, Rob. I hope it continues to open eyes in the provider world about the impact of trauma on pregnancy.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Kathleen, I guess it's time to wrap up. Before we go, I want to thank you, Kathleen, and all of your colleagues who made this issue possible. It really is quite an achievement, and I hope that our readers get to check it out. I also want to share with listeners some of the other events that Health Affairs is covering around perinatal mental health this month. Folks should check out our editor-in-chief, Alan Weil, who will be interviewing select authors in depth from this issue in his weekly podcast, A Health Podyssey. On April 24th, listeners should check out author Stephanie V. Hall from the University of Michigan, who will be participating in our journal club. Folks can sign up for that and check it out on Wednesday, April 24th from 3 to 4 Eastern. And you can find a recording of our virtual briefing on the issue. It's on our website, healthaffairs.org. All of that and more on our site, so folks should check it out. I want to thank everyone for listening. Don't forget to leave a review. Subscribe to Health Affairs This Week, wherever you get your podcasts. And thank you, Kathleen, for sharing your insights.
Well, Rob, I also want to credit my colleague, Sarah Dine, who was also lead editor on this issue. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Likewise.